This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Hi, this is Valerie Goldston. Let's read some National Geographic articles now. This next story is from Mind, Body, Wonder by Daryl Austin. The costs of fatherhood are well known. Financial responsibilities and related stress diminish sleep and less free time. But there are also plenty of mental and physical upsides that come from taking on such a pivotal caretaking role. These include greater stores of empathy, improved longevity, and more happiness and meaning in life. Men also report improvements in diet and exercise and less substance abuse after becoming fathers, says Sarah Shoppy Sullivan, a psychology professor at Ohio State University and a fellow of the National Council on Family Relations. A present father can also provide unmatched benefits for the kids they are raising. Children who grow up with invested fathers have better social, emotional, and academic outcomes than children without such fathers, says Lee Gettler, a biological anthropologist and director of Hormones, Health, and Human Behaviors Lab at the University of Notre Dame. Of course, related upsides also apply to mothers and all committed guardians and caregivers. But it seems appropriate to highlight the seemingly superhuman benefits that come from being a superhero dad. I and other researchers have consistently found that caring for and spending time with one's children is associated with emotional benefits for all parents, and especially for dads, says Catherine Nelson Coffey, a behavioral scientist, researcher, and the director of the Social Connection and Positive Psychology Lab at Arizona State University. Nelson Coffey has measured these benefits across multiple studies by comparing day-to-day activities in which men commonly engage while looking at who those activities were done with and what emotions were experienced during each one. We've consistently found that fathers report more positive emotions and a sense of meaning when they are spending time with their children compared to the other activities they do during the day, she explains. New fathers also experience a flood of happy hormones. Another noteworthy change that occurs when men become fathers is that as they spend time with their infants and young children, they experience a decrease in testosterone. Higher testosterone focuses time and energy on mating efforts and competition, while lower testosterone shifts time and energy commitments toward partnering and parenting, says Gettler, who co-authored the first large longitudinal study measuring such changes. The resulting empathy and understanding stemming from these hormone changes are among the reasons that on a behavioral level, anthropologists have been aware for a long time that those cultures where men live in close proximity to children tend to be less bellicose and less likely to initiate war, says Sarah Blaffler, professor emerita at the University of California, Davis, and author of the book Mothers and Others: The Evolutionary Origins of Mutual Understanding. Beyond hormonal changes, fathers also experience many positive emotions when their children say something amusing, learn a new skill, or show tender affection through words or hugs. Experiencing frequent positive emotions these ways are important building blocks for mental health and well-being, says Nelson Coffey. In a supportive study that Nelson Coffey co-authored and published this year, she showed fathers also experience a sense of gratitude that predicated greater life satisfaction and fewer negative emotions over time. Gettler points to additional related research that shows that partnered fathers who live with their children are also less likely to be depressed than single men without children. He says this is likely associated with the happy emotions that fathers frequently feel while caring for their children, and because of the satisfaction some men experience when providing for their family's financial needs. A broader social circle. Sarah Fingerman, a human development and family sciences professor at the University of Texas at Austin, says such opportunities are especially appreciated when a family moves to a new city. Supporting this, Nelson Coffey points to one of her parenting studies, which found that men with children experience a greater sense of social connection compared to men without children. She explains that when men feel connected to others, they are less likely to experience loneliness, which is a major risk factor for the development of depression and other mental health concerns. More physical activity versus the dad bod. Beyond such mental and social advantages, fathers also experience many physical health benefits. For instance, studies show that men are more likely to avoid drugs and ditch harmful substances like tobacco and alcohol, in part because young children help fathers to consider and prioritize what's most important in life, says Jay Fagan, professor emeritus at the School of Social Work at Temple University and the former co-director of the Fatherhood Research and Practice Network. Nelson Coffey says that eating habits also often improve as fathers work to model a balanced diet and healthier eating behaviors to encourage their children to do the same. Dads also commonly make more time to engage in physical activity and play with their kids, interactions that benefit father and child alike. When fathers engage in physical exercise and make it fun and a habit to take their kids, the kids also learn that exercising and staying healthy is fun and good for them, says Natasha Cobera, professor of human development and quantitative methodology at the University of Maryland. And while there is scientific evidence that some men gain weight, and what's often called the dad bod after becoming a father, Gettler notes that its occurrence may sometimes be more cultural than related to parenting, as he didn't find evidence of this occurring in another country in recent related research. Timing also plays a part in cases of new fathers packing on some extra weight. Nelson Coffey notes that during the early years of fatherhood, fathers are more likely to be sleep-deprived and are less often physically active. But that usually changes as their kids age, and often because of their kids. So, although there may be a cost in the early years, parents may benefit physically as their kids get older, she says. Some of these physical health benefits help explain several studies that show that fathers live longer than men without children, even controlling for marital status, says Jason Carroll, the Wheatley Institute's Family Initiative Director at Brigham Young University in Utah. Not all upsides. Of course, even when certain mental and physical health outcomes are better for dads when compared to non-dads, fatherhood is an exceptionally demanding role that can be its own source of enormous stress. Fathers can suffer from depression because parenting is intense and difficult, as much as it is joyous and rewarding, says Cabrera. She points out that becoming a new father can also be intimidating and overwhelming for many dads, and that relationships with teenage children can be especially fraught with tension. When navigating these uncharted waters, many fathers experience high levels of anxiety and self-doubt. Fathers also feel the responsibility to work harder and longer hours to support their children, which can put a lot of strain on their physical health, she adds. Children can also distract away from quality time with one's partner and be a strain on one's marriage, notes Nelson Coffey. Because of such factors, it's important for all parents, including fathers, to pay attention to how they are feeling, both mentally and physically, and to take these steps to strengthen their health, advises Shop Sullivan. While it may feel tempting or unavoidable to neglect one's well-being, she says, getting enough sleep and exercise and planning plenty of you time is still crucial. Healthy parents make better parents and better partners. Our next story is by Leah Worthington. Drinking on a plane has a unique effect on your body. Love an in-flight nightcap? Whether you're trying to pass time or ease anxiety, a drink could make your in-flight experience even worse. You've settled into your long-haul international flight. The cabin pressure has stabilized, the seatbelt sign is off, and the bar cart is heading down the aisle. Finally, time to unwind. And there's nothing like a Bloody Mary or a glass of wine to help you doze off for a few hours, right? Perhaps you consider a drink-induced nap a necessity to stave off jet lag or anxiety. As relaxing as it might seem, that drink might be doing more harm than good. New research found that alcohol compounds the effects of high altitude on people's bodies, putting an extra burden on the cardiovascular system, reducing blood oxygen levels, compounding dehydration, and impairing sleep quality. It can also make you even more anxious. Why not just avoid drinking it in a situation that is already stressful for the body, says study author Eva Maria Elmhorst. Still, questions remain about how exactly alcohol may interfere with the in-flight experience, especially sleep, and who's at greatest risk of health impacts. Experts discuss the science behind this research and what passengers can do to avoid the worst effects. The additive psychological effects of alcohol and altitude. Much like ascending a mountain, flying puts a strain on the body. With increased altitude comes decreased air pressure, which decreases the concentration of oxygen in the air, also known as hypobaric hypoxia, and results in reduced oxygen in our lungs and bloodstream, called hypoxema. Although planes are pressurized to minimize the impact, a plane at standard cruising altitude, 30,000 to 40,000 feet, would still have a cabin pressure matching that of an altitude above sea level, around 8,000 feet, says Peter Hackett, a high-altitude expert and emergency physician. For a healthy person, that amount of elevation gain may not be noticeable, especially because our bodies have natural adaptation mechanisms. Your heart rate's higher, you breathe more, either take more breaths each minute and or take deeper breaths, says physician and University of Washington professor of pulmonology, critical care, and sleep medicine, Andrew Lux. These are just some of a whole range of physiologic responses in the body, most of which are intended to help your body adjust to the low oxygen conditions and compensate for it. However, consuming alcohol may disrupt this response, Hackett says. Experts suspect that alcohol inhibits ventilation and thus oxygen intake. Alcohol is what we call a respiratory depressant, Hackett says. While a sober body will respond to high altitude by increasing breathing rates, he says, alcohol blunts that response. Indeed, the researchers found that participants who consumed alcohol before sleeping at simulated high altitude clocked elevated heart rates, 15 beats per minute higher than non-drinking participants, and decreased blood oxygen levels, 3% lower oxygen level concentration than sober group. Both of these effects strain the cardiovascular system. Why sleeping in flight is a challenge even without a drink. Sleep quality and duration already suffer at high altitude, even for healthy and sober folks, according to Lux. people spend much less time in the deeper stages of sleep and in REM sleep, he says. Lower oxygen levels cause people to wake up more frequently and experience periods of breathing punctuated by periods of apnea, a phenomenon called periodic breathing. Of course, all the noise, turbulence, cramped seats, and frequent interruptions of a flight also contribute to a less-than-ideal sleeping environment. There are any number of other things that are equally contributing to the problem, Lux says. Although a glass of wine might seem like a good relaxant, alcohol actually has an adverse effect on sleep quality, Piano says. Even at sea level, alcohol has been shown to elevate heart rates, which can interfere with REM sleep and disrupt cardiovascular relaxation. When you drink a lot of alcohol, it does have a depressant effect, and you feel sleepy, she explains. But as you're sleeping, your blood alcohol level is declining, and at certain blood alcohol levels, it actually becomes more of a stimulant and it wakes you up. The circulation of dry, cool air on flights has a dehydrating effect that can be exacerbated by alcohol. Alcohol inhibits antidiuretic hormones, which cause people to urinate more frequently, removing water from the body and further interrupting sleep. Add the disruptive effects of altitude on breathing and rest, and you have a recipe for a fairly restless flight. Alcohol and altitude affect some more than others. The mix of alcohol and altitude caused healthy participants in Elmhorst's study a degree of cardiac stress that Hackett says is comparable to taking a walk. The drop in oxygen levels, on the other hand, could cause headaches or dizziness, though he says it's likely negligible for people in good health. Lux agrees, noting that young, healthy people, including all of the participants in the study, can generally tolerate fair degrees of hypoxemia, while reduced oxygen levels over a prolonged period can cause tissue damage. In most cases, such as on flights, even the compounded effects of alcohol and altitude are mild, short-term, and will recede shortly after returning to sea level. The implications may be more serious among people who are older or suffering from pre-existing conditions, like heart or lung diseases, says Marianne Piano, a substance abuse expert and professor of nursing at Vanderbilt University. Theoretically, she says, an increase in heart rate or a drop in oxygen saturation levels could cause an acute physiologic consequence, such as heart failure. Practical tips for those who like to partake. If that casual in-flight drink isn't something you're quick to forego, experts offer some tips to minimize sleep and health impacts. Piano recommends consuming no more than one alcoholic beverage over the course of a flight. Best to have that glass of wine or cocktail with food and supplement with extra water, she adds. And, as on land, the effects of alcohol are stronger on an empty stomach. Ultimately, when looking at the effects of alcohol, it always comes down to a question of how much, Lux says. Go ahead and have a beer or a glass of wine, but don't overdo it. Our next story is by Sarah Murphy. The tragic backstory of one of the most haunted roads in America. Generations continue to grapple with ghostly tales along the incomplete Road to Nowhere and its dead-end tunnel in North Carolina. High above Fontana Lake, on the North Carolina side of Great Smoky Mountains National Park, lies the Road to Nowhere, a winding 6.5-mile pass that dead-ends at a 1,200-foot tunnel, accessible only by foot. If you walk it at night, the wind blows cold, voices carry, and the darkness seems to last forever. The park and nearby town, Bryson City, market the Road to Nowhere as a tourist attraction, and locals like Elijah Thornton grew up hearing chilly tales of supernatural danger. "There's a weird shadow over the place," he says. But what's truly haunting is the tunnel's unsettling history. In the 1940s, to facilitate the construction of Fontana Lake and Dam, the Tennessee Valley Authority, TVA, assured approximately 200 Appalachia families that they would construct a road to enable them to visit their ancestral cemeteries in exchange for relocating their homes. However, in 1969, the government halted construction due to concerns about potential acid runoff from exposed rocks. Although the National Park Service eventually agreed to compensate Swain County with $52 million instead of completing the road in 2010, this financial settlement has not resolved the ongoing issue, providing these families assistance accessing the 26 cemeteries now situated miles away from the lakeshore, accessible only via steep and poorly maintained trails. The promise was not a financial settlement. The promise was to build the road, says Karen Marcus, a psychologist in her 60s who has 5 generations of ancestors across multiple grave sites. The promise will never be kept. A history buried underwater. The Road to Nowhere families were the last of 50,000 people across 6 southern Appalachian states forced to relocate so the VTA could build 15 hydroelectric dams from 1933 to 1943. While the company claims this decade of construction transformed the poverty-stricken, often flooded valley into a modern, electrified, and developed slice of America, the reality of life in the Fontana Basin was far from the stereotype of the isolated, uneducated, impoverished mountain dweller. This was an industrial area, says Daniel S. Pierce, a history professor at the University of North Carolina, Asheville. As railroads began winding through the rugged terrain in the late 1880s, logging and mining companies followed closely behind, giving rise to thriving towns such as Proctor, Bushnell, and Judson, all of which were flooded and destroyed when the Fontana Dam, the largest east of the Mississippi River, was created in the wake of the Pearl Harbor attack to power a nearby aluminum plant. While most families impacted saw their towns buried underwater, the homes of the 200 families in what's now called the North Shore sat above the watermark, but their only access road to their family cemeteries was not. Instead of moving these families' loved ones, the TVA promised to build a new road. So Decoration Days, an annual Appalachian tradition, which folklorist Alan Jabor described as an act of respect for the dead that reaffirms one's bonds with those who have gone before, could continue. You couldn't have found a better people, mountain people, to be understanding of the war effort and want to contribute, says Leuna Woods, whose mother, Helen Cable Vance, grew up there. According to Lance Hardin, who studied the dam's impact on these families, the TVA took advantage of this generosity of spirit, paying property owners an average of $38 per acre, less than most relocated families received. As a result, land ownership among North Shore residents dropped by a quarter, and home ownership fell by nearly half. A lot of the available small farms were gone, and so a lot of them really struggled to find something nearby that could be a replacement to what they were losing, says Hardin. Pierce says that's a key reason why the cemeteries hold such profound importance to these families. They've lost their homes, they've lost their businesses, they lost their schools, you know, all the markers of community. But here's what's left. Keeping tradition alive. As years passed and no road appeared, families would make their own way to their cemeteries for decoration days. In the 1960s, us boys would go fishing and the men would go to the cemeteries and clean them off, says Henry Chambers, chairman of the North Shore Cemetery Association. Just being able to come over here was special. In 1977, after over 650 people attended a reunion the year prior for the nation's bicentennial, Helen Vance and her kin created the North Shore Cemetery Association to advocate for the road to be finished and, in the meantime, get government help to access their cemeteries. Since 1984, park rangers have ferried families across Fontana Lake and maintained trails for these annual visits from April to October. Chambers estimates the yearly costs, from travel costs to repairing graves damaged by weather and wild animals, to be about $8,000. To attend a decoration day is to understand how connected these families are to their shared history and what they call the home place. They clean the tombstones and decorate the graves with colorful cloth flowers. After the group sings Amazing Grace, Marcus reads a self-penned reflection before leading a prayer. Then it's time for a potluck. When the stories flow long and winding as the creeks that rush nearby. Lillian Hyatt shared her scrapbook with articles profiling her great-grandmother, Sarah Palestine Tinney Kirkland, a midwife who delivered 627 babies and designed many home chimneys. Frank March, an amateur historian from Tennessee, recalled the day 83-year-old Joe Cable Sr. said that the sheet metal March found on his family's old chimney was the fender of his brother's bicycle. He was so excited to be back there, March says. The park wants everybody to believe the Smokies is wilderness, but it has never been wilderness, Chambers says. Together and independently, he and March have mapped over 2,700 sites, including homes, churches, schools, and mills, across the park's 522,000 acres to prove their point. As for the Road to Nowhere's reputation, the North Shore families don't put much store in it. There's no ghostly whatever, says Woods. It's just an eerie feeling in that long of a tunnel to walk. With its cold concrete and graffitied stone, the Road to Nowhere is a dead place, not a place of the dead. The dead rest in the cemeteries that honor the generations of Appalachians who called this land their home. They need to come and see it, says 94-year-old Carrie Laney, when asked what people should know about the decoration days. They'll come back if they do. You've been listening to the Reader's Digest National Geographic. My name is Valerie Goldston, and this has been brought to you by the very good folks at the Mind's Eye Organization.